I don't know if you had it timed, did you?
No, just on there. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Thanks for coming, everybody. Have you all met Young before?
No, most of you. Hi.
Cool. And I'll just pitch in here. Yeah. We're kind of talking before you guys arrive, just about a nice way of going about things might be for us to sort of ask questions that can come up as we go along. So yeah, I just call that trap.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep it quite informal and casual. In a way, it's great to have this opportunity because it's sort of a practice run for me as well to talk about... hi, welcome to have a seat. Just have a bit of a practice run in this presentation. But the main theme is about the art fairs and different strategies galleries have used to present work at the art fairs. And of course, there's a lot of questions about why go to the art fairs, what place does it hold in the art world, and the different dilemmas that come around curating exhibitions for art fairs that are primarily a commercial venture. So feel free to interrupt while I'm going through the presentation, and I'll also be trying to provide as much captions of some of the images as I can in terms of the different galleries and artists' images that we'll be viewing. And so I'm currently working as a curator for City Art Rooms, which is a gallery in Auckland, and we had the opportunity to go to Europe for about a month in October and November of 2008. And we were there primarily to visit various art fairs in Europe, but also present two exhibitions by emerging New Zealand artists in Berlin at the Bridge Art Fair. And just a quick shout out to Red Bull and Air New Zealand, who helped sponsor us and get us out there. Now, I'll just show you some images of the various venues. There's over 100 art fairs in the world, basically, and they've become sort of the standard for dealer galleries to present their artists, their gallery sort of stable, as well as the artworks for an international community. And so I'll be just showing you some different views of different types of venues. And obviously the target audiences for the art fairs are collectors, curators, writers, other dealers, artists, and the general public. And, you know, why go to these things? Some of the reasons are to raise the profile of the artists. It's a different context for exhibiting artwork. Obviously we want to find new collectors, generate sales for the artists. It's also an opportunity to see what other galleries are doing and exchange information about different curatorial practices, see different artists in particular regions, and create dealer alliances. It's also an opportunity to expose your artworks to new curators, especially for inclusion into institutional shows, biennials, and it's also an opportunity for galleries to really make a statement. Some of the different art fairs have different sort of agendas as well. Gaisai is an interesting one that takes place, originated in Tokyo. It was actually founded by Takashi Murakami, the painter, and is actually an art fair for artists who aren't represented by galleries. So artists present individual applications and then are able to create their own stand. So in some ways it's critiquing the idea of agents representing artists in the art fairs. And I would probably argue that Art Cologne and Art Basel are probably the most important art fairs in Europe right now. Art Cologne was the first art fair and the oldest one that sort of follows this the tradition that we're used to now. That was in 1967. Art Basel is currently the largest attended art fair in Europe. And the strength of an art fair can probably be judged by how many satellite fairs that spring up as a result of the main art fair being there. So in Miami, for example, Art Basel has a branch which has created about 10 different art fairs that time their exhibitions around the same time. So you have Aqua, Pool, Diva, Red Dot, Scope, Flow, Pulse, and these all have very different focuses, whether in terms of the kinds of galleries or media-specific artwork as well. And the different kinds of venues that you'll see art fairs in are exhibition centers. I'll come back to this image in a bit. This cubicle model is quite standard and was probably the oldest model that was followed. This is in Art Forum Berlin. So this is a convention center. This is where the Bridge Art Fair was held last year. It's actually in this, hi there. It's in an apartment complex on Schönhauser Allee, which is near Kunstwerke and some of the other main dealer galleries in the Mitte district of Berlin. And this was an old apartment building that had been converted into galleries by the artists and the dealers that were there. So kind of a unique context. Preview Berlin was held in an old airport. And the Zoo Art Fair was at the Royal Academy of Arts Exhibition Hall. Scope London was held in a cricket field. So this is the building that was used for that. And aside from these kinds of venues, they've been held at hotels, in trucks. So there's quite a few alternative venues that art fair organizations will find to house all of these different galleries. This is FIAC, which is in Paris at the Grand Palais. So there's a bit of a historical connection if you think about this building being used for the World Expos and World Fairs, which was also used to disseminate culture and basically showcase things. And that whole idea of the arcades, which is sort of reflected in this, modern equivalent. You have the VIP section over here that need to be a very important person to access. But obviously you can just see from the different kinds of venues, they set the stage for the kinds of shows that you might see and thinking about the context for which you might view these works. This is someone who's looking at a didactic label, and it's just a great image, I think, in thinking about, what are we looking at and what are we looking for? And this is actually at the Saatchi Gallery. So I might talk about the different strategies now about organizing exhibitions. Because there are hundreds of galleries as well at these events, you have the problem of spectacles competing with spectacles. And all of this sort of loud static cancels out the individual effects of some of the artworks. And people might argue that art fairs are actually the worst kind of context to actually view artwork, because you have thousands of pieces, relatively very little context in terms of the artist's practice or history. But because of this, it also creates an interesting environment to think about, well, what do you show when you have this kind of problem? And how are galleries thinking about this, and what is their main agenda? So some of the strategies that are used, I'll talk about six or seven different ones. One thing that I noticed at a lot of the art fairs was a very sensitive use of the space in terms of creating architectural or design interventions. So a lot of galleries actually hired architects and design firms to create their booth for them. This is a gallery in FIAC, the Eric DuPont Gallery. And, this is actually the Gallery Jocelyn Wolf in Paris. And you can see that they've created this shelf to display small objects. And this is another gallery at FIAC, which has also transformed the typical white cube into this sort of brown frame where the artworks are put behind, but it's also a group exhibition. This is the La Blanche Serrier Gallery in Bologna, and they also hired an architect to design this sort of timber flooring. And the idea of this is obviously for the galleries to create visibility for themselves. When you have hundreds of white cubicles, it's just thinking about, well, how do you distinguish yourself even visually or from a branding point of view? But also communicates the gallery's probably ambitious nature in terms of presenting work on a different kind of platform, and really just creating their own sort of special space as well. So this is the same gallery at FIAC. This is Paris Projects, who have galleries in LA, Berlin, and I think recently opening up a branch in Athens. This is an installation by Assume Astrid Vivid Focus, and again, they've created this faux wall with the silhouette of Yoko Ono as the doorway. And again, it's just communicating their sort of rock and roll, sort of punk, sort of aesthetic that's reflected by a lot of the artists in their stable. And again, it just creates another visual distinction for the visitors that are very weary and trying to see everything as much as they can in the 3 days. And sort of the opposite approach by some galleries is basically packing small flat works. And obviously this is partly an economic decision as well. Rather than creating these elaborate sorts of installations, you have some galleries that bring a lot of small works. And in some ways this becomes a very commercial idea. This is an installation by three artists, Michael Dumontier, Marcel Zama, and Neil Farber. And they all had these small works at FIOC. And when I first came, the first day, there were about five red dots. And obviously this image communicates that the gallery is very interested in letting you know that works are selling. By the end of the fair, they had sold about 40 of these pieces for, you know, a couple hundred euros each. So this is a very, I think, commercial strategy that some galleries take. This is an image of collection Lambert in D'Avignon. And this is also a similar approach where they've brought smaller works and edition works on paper. And this obviously lets galleries sell multiple versions of something, whether it's an edition of 50 or 100. And the works are all quite packable as well. So they were obviously taking a bit more of a commercial approach in terms of how they're presenting their artists. Another popular model is the salon style or the group shows. Now this was an interesting take by a gallery also at FIAC in Paris. They basically made their stockroom visible and daily would change their exhibitions from the work that was present. This allowed them to be flexible in terms of showing different works and also letting collectors walk away with artworks and then replenishing their stock walls with new pieces. But what I like about it as well is it's actually being very transparent and very open about the fact that, yes, this is an art fair where, you know, we're selling commodities in a sense, and they visibly made a statement about that rather than putting a wall to hide their stockroom, which they could have easily done. And so it becomes this part installation, also somewhat of a critical statement, but yet it still promotes their agenda. You know, this is one of the galleries that I don't actually have the caption for, unfortunately. Usually, most of these photos I took and was able to label, but yeah, I didn't have a name for this gallery, so I apologize about that. Oops. This gallery is Annex 14. This is at the Zoo Art Fair. Again, taking a salon approach. And the benefits of this is also when you're a newcomer to one of the art fairs, you get to present a portfolio of your artists. And it's always difficult to know how people are going to react to particular artworks, especially if you're maybe a regional gallery that presents primarily artists from your country. But I think there are benefits in terms of being able to create shows that have a curated feel, but also offering a lot of different kinds of ways for visitors to maybe find ideas that they like about your gallery without maybe putting all of your eggs in one basket in terms of promoting just one particular artist. This is Nettie Horn in London, which also took a group show approach. And Gallery September in Berlin at the Art Forum. This booth actually won the award for the best booth at this particular gallery, and there's about 120 galleries that are represented here. And they've taken that, again, a different approach in terms of creating this neon cube and, you know, also the spectacle, but it's interesting to me that this gallery won the award for best stand because they do have so many different artworks presented in a way that I personally didn't find that cohesive, but they obviously took a risk in terms of painting, but is this actually enhancing the artworks, or is it more just a marketing and branding statement? This is sort of my maybe criticism of this particular presentation. Another approach that galleries take is the black box, or using the stand to present video works, light-based works. This is Eric Dupont Gallery in Paris, presenting video works by Kate Gilmore. This is a project that was at the Scope Art Fair in London by Gagliard Art Gallery in Torino. This is a not too dissimilar from a Tony Orsler-esque kind of piece with sculptures and video projections. This is a work by Daniel Glassert. This was one of my favorite booths, actually, at FIAC. The piece is called La Fabrique by Tanya Murad at the Dominique Fiat Gallery. What they had done was actually curtain off their two entrances so that when you enter the space, you had this multi-layered video installations of Indian seamstresses. And outside of the booth, you could hear the sound of all of these different spinning machines. And when you enter the space, it's quite a nice focus on this particular work, and you don't have the distraction of everything outside of this venue. And they're very sensitive about, you know, creating netting above the ceiling and really creating their own space within the myriad of cubicles that were at this particular art fair. And I just found the effect to be very effective.
So where did they do the business side of things? Like, did they sit outside the booth with
You know, this gallery took a more radical approach in terms of just having the gallery's contact details outside of the wall. And I think there was someone who was kind of eyeing the space. But I imagine with this particular setup, you know, they're not going for a major sale, but they're obviously promoting this particular artist to curators. And they would have done all of that sort of social networking on the first night. Yeah, that's right. So I think with these kinds of projects, you know, it is about raising the profile of the particular artist, as well as the gallery saying that we are actually interested in promoting these ideas and types of exhibitions that are going to have some kind of commentary in the contemporary art dialogue, or just presenting new work that hasn't been seen outside of their home city. And what I found between Paris, London, and Berlin at the major art fairs, galleries would typically present the same thing in all three places. So it was really about promoting a particular artwork or a particular artist and just getting them as much you know, attention for the curators and for the institutions as possible. This was, I think, by far the most popular approach by galleries, is having the eye grabber or the centerpiece in your space, and then having your group show kind of discreetly around it. So the idea again is this, you know, instant visibility. You want people to walk into your space, you want to grab people's attention, and then you can slowly unfurl the other artworks that you're showing. This is a gallery from China who did this installation with found soda cans. This is Eva Hober in Paris, Elena Vidal. And so you can kind of see with these particular presentations, it is about that instant grab. And you almost get the feeling that the booth is designed around the centerpiece, with maybe not as much regard for the other kinds of works that are surrounding it. Another popular model is obviously doing solo exhibitions. This is by an artist named Eric Doringer, who's a New York-based artist, and he presented a booth at Gaisai, the self-promotion art fair for artists who don't have gallery dealers. And he's commenting on this idea of excess, massive consumption, sales, brand names. His practice deals with recreating famous artworks, but in bootleg style. So you can see you have the Damien Hirst dot paintings, the Andy Warhol flower prints, the shit Madonna, and he sells these bootleg copies of very famous contemporary artworks for nothing over for $250. And he travels to various art fairs around the world, also to various biennials, and sets up a little shop, like a stand, like a hot dog stand or a kebab shop, where collectors can come and buy these mini versions of popular artworks. See Julian Opie, Yoshitomo Nara. And it's quite clever in the way that he's critiquing this idea of the brand, because the artist at a certain level does become a brand, and it also keeps him up to date with contemporary practice, and is almost a little catalog of, you know, who are the artists that are hot right now. So it's I thought it was an interesting presentation at Gaisai. This is a solo presentation of the artist Sherry Levine at Simon Lee Gallery. This is also a solo exhibition at Eric DuPont by Yazid Oulab. This is also part of FIAC. What they do is prizes for artists called the Prix Marcel Duchamp, and they basically nominate about five artists who are then invited to do solo presentations. And a lot of art fairs to engage with the critical ideas in contemporary art, and also to say that they have an interest not just in selling or promoting the commercial aspect of the fairs, but to also be another venue or opportunity to create dialogue. They'll have these prizes, lectures, interventions, and other sorts of programming that also try to subvert the very nature of them being these commercial fairs. This is a performance piece at the Bridge Art Fair by Tumi Terrell Gallery. And this is one of the fairs that was in the apartment building, so the artists had the opportunity to use the toilet as a site-specific arena to present his artwork. This is work by Peter Liversidge, also at Art Forum Berlin. Another performance by Crispin Gerholt at Gallery K in Berlin. These were self-enclosed plexi boxes where the artists or the artist actors were interacting throughout the day. And also this kind of presentation is a gallery communicating that they do want to present something that's you have to be here to see. You know, it's not something that you can experience outside of this three-day context. Unless you're going to be visiting their home gallery. Another site-specific installation. This is also at the Bridge Art Fair. This is a solo exhibition by a photographer named Insook Kim at the Mickey Wick Gallery in Scope. The reason why I highlight this particular stand, I talked with a dealer and was curious about the different sizes of the photographs that this artist had in our exhibition, because they had very, very large scale works that took up the whole wall like this, medium sized works, and then very small sized works. But I noticed in their closet that they had a smaller version of this particular image, and I thought, well, why would they do that? And the dealer had a very particular model for promoting the photographers in our stable. There were three edition sizes for the photographs. The wall size works were aimed towards museum collections, and those were usually an edition of three or edition of five that would sell for around 100,000 euros.
This was prescribed by the gallery?
This was prescribed by the gallery in accordance with the artist, yeah. So the edition of three, edition of five works went for $100,000, euros approximately. The medium scale works were editions of 10 for serious collectors at 10,000 euros. And then the image could also be purchased in an edition of 100 that was about an A3 size photograph for 2,500 euros framed. So it's an interesting thing to think about in terms of, you know, the agenda behind this particular gallery and the way that they're promoting the works. And I kind of stuck around throughout the day to just sort of see what was happening, and they had sold about 50 smaller editions of this particular work, and the large version did end up going to a prestigious German institution. So from a commercial standpoint, it did work, but raises some interesting questions, I suppose, especially when you're talking about the focus of these art fairs being about these unique objects that you travel to see. And in that sense, art fairs might have this kind of historical tie to the pilgrimage that you would take to go to biennials or to see sacred sites.
I'm a bit surprised that a museum or institution would buy in this venue, because it seems like that would be committee or something to make this decision. So are these like deal places, like they have another artist in mind that they could go in and
Yeah, you have both. You have all of the curators from institutions that are there actually purchasing for the collection, and they'll have artists in mind that they'll be looking to acquire. But because these events are so frenzied in terms of the number of collectors and competing institutions, everyone wants to get the best work, that some decisions are really instantaneously made. And so they may come with a budget, or they may come with an outline, or contact their sort of favorite galleries beforehand, do a quick tour, and within 5 minutes consult with each other and make a decision. And you also have different collecting groups that have a set amount of budget and will be acquiring work by new artists, for example, so works that they don't, artist practice that they don't know or aren't familiar with. And it is actually competition, not just for the galleries, but for the collectors and for the curators as well, because everyone wants the, you know, the best things. So I think it does override some traditional methods of acquiring. This is talking about the idea of sort of solo exhibitions. These are the performance artists, Ava and Adele. And I bring them up because they're present at major art events around the world, and they have this sort of play where they dress up as the same character, and they're sort of sexless in a way, even though you have a male and a female. And so these art fairs actually become an opportunity for artists to present performances or works as well that aren't sanctioned or maybe exist outside of the structured program. And because the art fairs, again, it's about this issue of attention and visibility, artists will sort of appropriate that to their own ends as well. So all they need to do is walk around, and they get photographed, they get the press, you know, Ava and Adele show up again, that kind of thing, and you do see a lot of intervention. Sorry?
They get paid to go.
Yeah, that's right, that's right. Yes. Well, I think, right, when they were first starting out, it was sort of more of a renegade project, but now, because they have become brands as well, you're right, they do get invited to come so that it's almost like a seal of approval, like this is one of the important art fairs, because Ava and Adele are here. This is a performance by Momus, who's primarily known as a musician. He presented a work in Berlin as well as part of the British Art Fair. So these art fairs do try to attract celebrities as well in terms of promoting the brand of the art fair. So I know that in Miami they had Peaches perform, and you get sort of this interesting intersection between fashion, music, art. And it's this idea of sort of prestige and glamour that art fairs are trying to promote so that they can get the visitor numbers as well as the top galleries to come to their events. And this is another specially curated project at the Zoo Art Fair that was about vinyl. So they invited about 15 artists to create site-specific vinyl works in conjunction with the art fair. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about the project that City Art Rooms did in Berlin at the Bridge Art Fair. One of the reasons why we decided to go to this particular fair, there were about 32 other exhibitors, so it was a curated art fair where the director, rather than trying to pack numbers, they were really just trying to select galleries that would have a dialogue with each other, and all emerging galleries, so these were primarily unknown spaces. And the particular venue of being in an apartment building offered a different kind of opportunity. It wasn't a faceless cubicle. Every space was transformed in a different way. And it was also a really great opportunity to talk to visitors, because there wasn't this sort of cold or intimidating presence when you entered the gallery space, because it really was like just going to someone's house and viewing their collection. So this is just the stairwell of the four-flat building. So this is the space that City Art Rooms had, and we actually had two rooms to work with. We decided to do two different exhibitions, one that was sort of a solo focus on artists Helen Calder and Jeffrey Heath, and a group exhibition that also tied into a catalog that we produce specifically for this event. And just a little bit about City Art Rooms. We had our 1 year anniversary just a few months before going to the art fair, and the publication was entitled Unlimited, which reflected our approach in terms of working with artists at that stage. City Art Rooms came about because there was maybe a need for a gallery to promote artists that were emerging, but also some that were established, but maybe not coming from the same roots. So working as a curator there, I had never studied in New Zealand. I came completely fresh into the New Zealand art scene, so I perhaps didn't have the same biases in terms of looking at particular universities or artist backgrounds, who they had studied under, who they had worked with. So it was really an open approach in terms of selecting artists for the gallery. And initially, there wasn't an overriding theme or sort of curatorial interest in terms of showing, abstract painters or minimalism or post-conceptual work. It was really just responding to the different voices that were in the New Zealand art scene and working with artists that we felt had a really unique voice and something interesting to say, and then rolling our exhibitions based on the artists rather than our particular curatorial agenda. So the group exhibition was, I felt, pretty necessary for us in our first overseas presentation. And a lot of these artists had never exhibited outside of New Zealand before. So I wanted to ensure that a lot of our artists had this opportunity to have their work seen by various curators and collectors abroad. But because it was our first time in Europe, and for a lot of these artists as well, in some ways it's important, I think, to show the kinds of work that you're dealing with, because sometimes it gives you a better picture of the gallery rather than just promoting one particular artist and getting maybe pigeonholed as a particular kind of gallery. And you can kind of see along the lower corner here, we have our publications as well that a lot of these works were present in. And so this is looking out into the hallway across the two-bedroom apartment. And then the next room had a solo installation by Helen Calder, who's with us today. And a solo exhibition by Jeffrey Heath. And, you know, as a gallerist, there are a lot of risks involved, obviously, with participating in art fairs. Because it's a huge investment, and a project like this at the very cheap end of the scale can easily cost about $20,000. And for galleries that are going to the more established fairs, throwing parties, having these elaborate sort of spectacles, it can cost more than $100,000. And it's but somehow I feel it's important to participate in some sort of international dialogue where there is a huge concentration of collectors and curators coming out to see the work. And just by us being present, in Berlin for 3 or 4 days, we were able to talk to curators from the Centre Pompidou, San Francisco MoMA, and making a few sales for the artists as well. And the idea of having this solo exhibition presentation as well as a group show is it's actually a long-term strategy. So you enter this particular scene, getting people's attention in particular artists, but when you go back next year, you can focus in on maybe fewer artists and do more specific presentations or installations. And you don't need to show as much maybe in your second time around, because you do establish those initial connections and introduce who you are, essentially. And then every year becomes this ongoing narrative of how the gallery is developing and what they're showing. And speaking of what we're looking at, this idea of visibility also is in the people that attend these fairs. This woman was pretty standout, I think, in terms of her outfit and just a collector. And there's a really interesting performance piece that was created by Tino Segal in 2003 that was commissioned by the Frieze Art Fair. And Tino Segal primarily creates social situations that comment on the particular context, whether it's a biennial or solo exhibition. And he contacted Isabella Blow, who is a very famous fashion sort of consultant and director that discovered a lot of young designers like Alexander McQueen in London. And she basically did a tour of the Frieze Art Fair, not of the galleries and not of the artwork, but of actually what people were wearing. So she had a group and camera following her, and she would do these live sort of fashion correspondences, I suppose, in the art fair scene. And again, I think it's a critique of this idea of visibility, not just in terms of the gallery side, but the people who are attending and the nature of competing for attention. And of course, essential to any art fair are the champagne trolleys. And, you know, related to this idea of excess and luxury and courting all of the people that you want on your team, this is an after party that was hosted by Sadie Cole's HQ Gallery. This was following a solo exhibition by Sarah Lucas and Gabrielle Curry. And they had rented a mansion in London at a private club and hosted a dinner for about 200 people. I somehow got a ticket to this thing. And it was a pretty elaborate 5-course meal. And again, the main reason that the galleries are doing this is to brand who they are, to say that they're serious and going to be around, and to create this branding identity of a luxurious space where only the best people with the most money are present. And I was lucky enough to be actually seated at the artist table with Sarah Lucas, Tracy Emin, some of the more well-known YBAs. And just as a kind of funny wrap-up, as dinner got on, Tracy Emin was sitting to my left, and she was just getting really really sloshed, basically, and living up to her reputation. And I just kind of end with her because she's sort of the perfect metaphor for this artist who's the queen of attention, always getting into headlines, and has also branded herself as this sort of public spectacle that the tabloids just love to eat up. And she at one point actually took my bag, and I found her in the next room with my possessions, and I asked her, you know, what are you doing? And she's very inebriated at this point and said, you know, no, this is mine. I said, no, actually, those are my things, and it's my camera in there. And she said, you know, I just need something to hold on to. I just need some stability right now. And somehow my bag ended up being this token of stability. And you can't really see her here because the picture is quite dark, but I was trying to very discreetly take some photos. This is her, who she called her escort number 9 of the evening, her boyfriend. And this is her being consoled by a friend after I got my bag back. There she is again. So, and very quickly after this photo, you know, her entourage sort of came to her defense, and I wasn't able to take any more pictures. But, you know, this idea of, again, she, and you almost wonder, is this planned or is this just who she is? And it just feeds that that spectacle machine. And yes, I know. Yeah, I mean, I was thinking that I could be quite vicious and, you know, sell these to the art newspapers, but I thought that's kind of an old track. But the last image I'll end on is actually an artwork by Urs Fischer that was presented by Gavin Brown in New York. This was at the very first Frieze Art Fair in 2003. And it's actually the most memorable piece of all of the numerous booths and art fairs that I've attended. But it was a very simple idea. It was a packet of crumpled cigarettes that was tied to a very translucent piece of string. And there was a motor mechanism above the booth that wasn't that visible that was slowly tugging this cigarette carton around the space, just very slow pace. And you enter their space thinking, oh, did this gallery not show up? Did they, you know, have a problem with logistics? But then you notice this crumpled cigarette box just slowly making its way across the carpeting. And it by far got the most attention, you know, at this art fair because it took a very understated approach, very risky in a way, but I think, again, it was the artist being very conscious of the fact that these events are about spectacle and about excess and making a comment about that. Of course, in this strange way, this becomes a spectacle in itself as well. But this particular work has always stuck with me, and you know, even 6 years later, I can instantly recall the work, so I thought it would also serve as the caption for the press release. So that's my presentation, just some of my observations about the art fairs. And again, I thought it'd be more useful to just go through a slideshow-like presentation, just to give people an idea of what the art fairs are like if you've never attended one before. Obviously, Auckland is hosting their art fair at the end of this month. So you can maybe come along and do some comparisons. Sorry? No, our partner gallery, Sanderson Contemporary Artist, going to be participating, but we're planning some other, again, kind of non-sanctioned projects for the fair. did you have any questions about any particular fairs or anything that you saw in the presentation?
I had kind of a pregnant question about the presentation that you had in the apartments. In the slide that you had with the Jeff Pate photo,
yes,
it looks like there's a row of white gallery-looking track lights.
Yes, that's right.
And I wanted to know whether that was something that was fitted out throughout all of the apartments to kind of facilitate the experience of the work, because that's not something that you've seen.
Actually, this particular apartment building was already fitted with these track lights, so it made it quite easy to convert it into the gallery space. I would say that we maybe in some ways took a more traditional approach in turning the space into a neutral gallery space as much as possible, but we did have some of the existing furniture there just so that people could sit down and give it a bit of a domestic feeling. But for example, we decided to just keep the curtains and other things like this, and some galleries did keep the beds in the space as well so that people could sit on the beds and have chats with their clients. But this that's also, probably an interesting metaphor, going to bed with your clients, but yeah. But yeah, that's a great observation. So, did you have a question?
I'm going back on something. You said that these kinds of spaces, perhaps less intimidating because they're more domestic. I actually wonder whether that's true, whether it's the contract, the art fair, I think art for, especially these spaces, are quite intimidating because they're quite sort of specialist and confrontational. And if you go, I think a lot of people go to art fairs because no one's going to engage them.
Right.
It's a really difficult subject unless you want it.
In some ways you might be right, because it is a more intimate kind of space, so it's harder to ignore the person sitting there.
You don't confront me. Or someone or something.
And somewhere like France, there's like an expo here where everything's laid out and being a tourist like mine, and it's like very system and stuff.
And it's also like numbers and people, so it's like you never feel like you're on show.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you're right about that the at the cubicles kind of spaces, there's maybe more anonymity in terms of being able to go in with the crowd and sort of, phase out as well. I think it all comes down to the sort of personal strategies that the gallerists take on, or maybe the personas that they exude when they're at their stands. That's right. We made a very conscious decision to greet people, but not to be too aggressive in terms of approaching them about works that they were looking at as well, because there was kind of this natural feeling of people, at some point coming back to where we were sitting and asking questions if they did have any. But I guess that sort of the intimidation is slightly different in terms of how
it's... not really talking about...
More the artwork, do you think?
There's another kind of public that can get introduced.
I think the audience for this kind of venue as well, it's interesting because people... don't know quite what to expect in this kind of venue, because they're used to the context of it being an apartment. So there is a sort of novelty to the way that the space is transformed, that somehow I think was a friendly gesture. It was more like the art was being inserted into this everyday space as a surprise, rather than you going to a convention center where people are dressed like a million bucks. Yeah, we did. So there were different groups.
It's a really nice place.
It was gorgeous. Yeah. And I mean, another strategy about going to this particular fair is that we knew that there were going to be a reduced amount of galleries and more space for us to work with as well. And it's nice that the transition between each gallery, there was quite a bit of space, and you're leaving a physical room, and you don't have view of multiple galleries in one setting. So you're really able to set the tone for your particular space, and it gives maybe people a bit of a cleansing palette as they're leaving, one doorway and entering another one. And the sort of intimidating factor of some of the larger art fairs actually is more just the sheer, number of galleries and the sheer number of things to look at. You just don't know where to pay attention, where to place your focus. And in this context, at least you can sort of take one space at a time before transitioning into something new. Yes. You get sort of art fatigue after a while, and you become very jaded about the art world after thing. Hundreds of thousands of things, but it's quite refreshing as well to see sort of what regional the sort of regional flavor, I guess, that you might have in Paris versus London versus Berlin, or if you're looking at galleries from Africa, for example, compared to galleries from China or something. You do get to get an international sort of feel for things, sort of like at a food court, than having to, I mean, that's kind of what it is, isn't it? It's sort of a food court for galleries.
Environment, do you think this is, I mean, in some ways it reflects that like excess
right.
culture that is kind of a little bit excessive.
I mean, I think what's going to happen is a lot of satellite fairs probably will fold or disappear because of the, because of the economic conditions. But hopefully the effect is that it slims the fat. It takes out some of the spaces that are purely there for, just trying to ride this wave of making money via the fairs. There are some galleries who have closed down their primary spaces or use their primary space more as an office, really. And they just go to maybe 10 art fairs a year, making most of their income. And this kind of an interesting idea because then, you become more like an agent rather than maybe a resource or a public good to your community where people can come in and see exhibitions, but just becoming more like a mobile salesman, I suppose, is what happens.
So that's interesting because the other model is to use the art fair as sort of like an office.
Yes.
Back into the gallery space.
Yeah.
So that's switching it around.
I think there's so many different formats and different ways people engage, because some people treat it like a biennale or like a Kunsthalle, where galleries will present a very high-level sponsored project that you might easily see at a Venice Biennale or at a private institution. So I think different galleries use it as different kinds of opportunities, whether it's exposure as another vehicle for promoting a particular kind of exhibition, or for sales, or just for networking as well, because that's all part of it. And I think the best approach is being aware of all of these conflicting agendas, the sort of commercial side, the promotion side, and the the integrity of wanting to promote good work and give artists the space to show work in a context that's going to be positively reflecting on their work rather than detracting from their work as well. That sort of switch between the office in terms of being home or the office being abroad is, I think, more recent.
Can I ask our relationship with your neighbours? What were they like next door?
We got along quite well with our neighbours. There's actually just two galleries on two to four galleries on each floor, and we just had one gallery next door to us, and they actually were similar in terms of being a gallery that was quite new, showing primarily emerging artists, showing a diversity of media as well. So there was kind of a nice I guess, connection between what they were doing and what we were doing. But there wasn't really much competition in terms of us staking out our territory, because the collectors were going to basically go through all of the spaces, and it wasn't this big issue. So it was
fun. Did you get to select which apartment you ended up in?
We did. There were floor plans provided to the different galleries, and you could select either a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, three-bedroom apartment, and then also look at the peculiarities of each space and see what you wanted to work with.
Mm-hmm.
That performance of the in the bathroom was actually the gallery next door to us, so they picked an apartment that particularly had that available, so that they knew that they could use one of their performance artists at the fair.
So, how did this come available? I mean, I know that everyone gets paid for that in hotels, hotels to evacuate.
Right.
Period of time.
Mm.
Is that what happened
here? Oh, sorry, are you asking how did we get involved, or
no,
how did our fair get involved?
We're the people that did the people.
Oh, right. Well, this is actually one of those sort of hybrid living spaces where they have temporary housing. So it's more like a transitory sort of space.
Mm-hmm. So
they're
just regional.
Yeah. Companies can rent them, travelers can rent them as well, but there are a few permanently owned apartments, and they very kindly loaned their space for 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the challenges with working in the space, which you can't really tell because of the photography, but there were a lot of existing things in the building that did get in the way in terms of furniture, sort of,
mm-hmm.
Quirky domestic things that were just
so
in the space.
Was that furniture that you've got in there?
Yeah, so that was all there. So that was all existing. And so, I mean, there was trying to, I guess, create this balance between using the existing context of the space,
mm-hmm.
and not trying to, hide the fact of what it was, but still creating a space that was suitable for showing the artwork, where you weren't competing with these kind of odd elements that seemed out of place. But I think some of the galleries really did try to create just a very neutral white cube space, and they hid all of the furniture, they repainted the walls, had didactic wall labels next to the artwork, and I found that to be kind of maybe the wrong approach, because again, it was just trying to transform the space into something that it could never really be because of the virtue of what it was.
So can I go back to the other part of the question that Julie was asking
yes.
about how study art rooms got involved in the first place?
Yes.
I think you said earlier that you were invited.
Yeah, well, what had happened, I travelled to Miami the year previous, again, to just investigate different art fairs and see which ones we might want to get involved with, in terms of where the galleries level was, as well as the different kinds of presentations of the different art fairs. So I met with different directors and different coordinators of these art fairs, and just kind of told them who we were and that we were interested in possibly participating. And Bridge Art Fair actually has set themselves up in New York, Miami, London, Berlin, and Basel. And I met with the director in Miami, and they visited our website, had a look, and invited us to apply.
Mm-hmm.
We sent them an application, and yeah, we were accepted. So,
did you get a chance to say, "Oh yes, Berlin, please"?
We actually were looking to do London, but I think someone asked about the economic conditions, and then Bridge Art Fair decided to cut back and scale back on all of their different satellite events and focus on Berlin. So we ended up going to Berlin instead. Which was a bit riskier for us, because Art Forum Berlin is the newest fair in terms of these major European ones. And I think they've taken more of an experimental platform in terms of promoting the artwork rather than focusing purely on sales and tapping into that market. So London would have been probably more financially successful for us, because there is a greater deal of collectors, as well as us having more there's a huge, actually, Kiwi expat community in London that are art collectors. But we decided to go to Berlin anyway, because we knew that there was going to be a curatorial focus in terms of, there are actually curator tours for the Bridge Art Fair. that they weren't planning in London. So I think London was geared more as a commercial venture, whereas Berlin was more about exposure. There were only about 32 galleries at this particular event, which was really great because you got more space and you got to, really had more time with the people that were visiting. We were just invited from that prior meeting. And since going to Berlin, we've been invited to attend other fairs as well. I think I got about 6 or 7 emails when we came back for different fairs in different cities. And again, it's just about evaluating which ones do we want to participate in and what's going to be the best sort of venue for the artists that we're showing right now.
Can I ask also, is there a kind of a fee that
pay? Yes.
And then on top of that, you cover all of the freight costs and however the presentation rolls, whatever else.
There's many, many fees. There's there's the application fee, which you pay just to express that you're interested, and even if you get rejected, that's a non-refundable fee. Then if you're accepted, there's a participation fee, which is anywhere from, £3,000 to, £10,000, £20,000. It really depends on the prestige of the fair and also how the longevity of the fair and the kind of expense that they're putting into all of their extraneous events. So the gallery's fee is what helps support the existence of the art fairs and their extra programming. But also they're obviously getting sponsorship kinds of arrangements. So the gallery paid for the City Art Rooms paid for the application participation fees, the marketing, most of the freighting costs as well. And again, Air New Zealand sponsored our flights, so we were able to fly over there for free, which was great. We stayed with friends in all the different cities that we visited, so trying to eliminate that hotel accommodation cost. We're a gallery that's just approaching our 2-year anniversary now, and the way that we run is by making sales, but also just from the director's personal finances. So, for us to participate in this kind of event, it is quite a commitment, and it's something that we, really want to do, which is why we take that risk. But we took on most of the cost for this particular event. That's right. Well, and the other thing is too, obviously it's great for our artists in New Zealand to be able to say that they have exhibited their work overseas and starting to create little alliances with other gallerists that might like some of our work and hopefully making some connections between different cities and our artists. And also I found that talking to some of the artists on returning from this trip, they somehow maybe became a bit more serious in terms of what they were going to do next, because they're not just showing their work in New Zealand anymore, but they're trying to communicate the practice to an international community that has maybe a different set of standards or a different context. So it's thinking outside of your audience of just New Zealand, but maybe who else is going to connect with my work and my practice.
Is New Zealand a hard sell?
No, it was great, actually. It was a lot of the Germans that came to our stand said, "Why are you here?" Because we're so far away, and they were very surprised that we were at this particular fair. We were the only New Zealand gallery. There were a few Australian galleries at some of the other major art fairs that had New Zealand artists in their portfolio, but this particular year that we went,
some people don't have a problem kind of collecting in another quantity.
No, yeah, well that's right.
I think it's positive to be a New Zealander overseas.
Pardon?
I think it's positive to be a New Zealander overseas because you're one of very few, as opposed to being one of very many people in the US.
That model, having an office here, and really operating through, not necessarily art fields.
There are even galleries in New York that do this, because if you think about the hundreds of galleries that are based in New York, there's one dealer that I know who has a website, he has his gallery, and he has his address where you can contact him. It's actually literally just an office space where he does his phone calls and emails. But on his business card, you can publish that he has a space. And he represents individual artworks and a lot of secondary artworks, but then will still attend art fairs as a sole trader. And for the artists, it's like they're represented by a gallery in New York. And, you know, if you're, you know, in a Madrid at the Argo Art Fair, you know, no one's going to know that you don't actually exist. That's right, yes.
And if you, I mean, if you sort of reduce your overheads here,
Exactly,
yeah,
right.
You might afford for that. but it's keep operating.
How's it?
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah.
Well, and if, especially if you're just, you know, one consultant, let's say, you know, working out of your flat, and then you just save all of your income to travel every year. You know, it's just yourself and the artwork that you're bringing, and that's where a lot of people also will be.
You do have to
carpet sales. How many, like, did just two of you go?
Yes, there's just two of us. So it was Kylie Sanderson was the director and myself. It was a lot of work.
Were you both there at the same time every day? Or did you take one day, one day?
Yeah, we did take turns. We were both present on some days. It was, I guess, in some ways beneficial when I could be there because I can communicate in German as well. So we did get a lot of German people coming in. But it's, once you've, you know, set up, I mean, you know, one or two people really is all you need. But we did trade off so that we could see the other things going on in Berlin at the same time. I don't know. These art fairs are really interesting because, again, you get this high impact, this high density sort of experience. And it's a very popular model, but it does bring into question a lot of business practices and gallery practices and how that relates to, you know, what the nature of art is and why do we look at art, why do people create art. And this is so consumption-driven that I think art fairs and galleries are trying to subvert that by hopefully presenting projects that are focusing
but
more on presentation.
But they are increasingly doing that. If you look, say, at those top, say, Australian galleries that come over here, the solar shows.
Yeah.
Michael Lett, one of those two, is just the solar.
That's right, yeah. Because it's, you know, there's this kind of, I don't know if I'd call it irony, but it's very clever in the fact that it is very much about the artwork commenting on the specific context, but at the same time being what it's trying not to be, if that makes sense. Like, it's a spectacle, but it's a quiet spectacle. And he sort of figured out how to comment on the fact that, you know, he knows that he's making this piece for an art fair, right? And it might work in a gallery setting or in a museum setting as well, but for me it has a particular resonance, you know, of being installed in a specific space, in this specific kind of context. So, and I think, you know, Michael Lett's space also is very aware of that, and the fact of presenting, you know, cardboard boxes and, you know, packaging, basically, by Eve Armstrong. But it's an economical and pragmatic issue as well. I mean, some galleries who are very established in Australia, you know, are able to afford to come over to Auckland and present these high-impact projects where they might not make an initial return, but it becomes a branding exercise in a way as well.
Well, especially it's quite interesting because he's just so close, isn't it?
And you'll see at the Auckland Art Fair in May, you know, which galleries are really promoting the selling end of their agenda versus trying to create
really
interesting.
It's really about galleries, isn't it?
It is, yeah, that's right. And, you know, as an artist as well, I do think that, again, it is kind of a strange context to present work, but you do it because you do want people to have access to the artwork, you know, because you know that you are getting several thousands of visitors. And if they're not going to be able to come to New Zealand, it's great to develop your audience.
It's interesting because I'm pretty old, but no, I was young. It's just that years ago, say, when I was a younger girl, there's no way I'll be able to work enough. Like, it was just totally, it was just an anathema, and I just would never ever lower myself to that degree. And now, 2009, I'm actually making a work development thing. And I vowed I'd never do that. And it's just, you just have to do it. It's all become part of.
In the tutu with Christine Webster book,
was it?
When you wore that ballet dress in the Christine Webster photograph. Have you?
What did you see there?
Oh, I haven't had any time. I think showing that in India.
Well, I think, you know, what's happening, though, you get the galleries that are responding, but you actually have the art fairs that are adapting as a result of that, so, you know, from...
Well, that's what would happen now.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think Gaisai is a great example because, again, it's an art fair, but driven by the artist, so there's no galleries. It's cutting out that sort of middleman, in a sense.
Yeah,
I think that's really great. And the satellite, a lot of the satellite art fairs actually came from artist-run spaces, alternative spaces, getting together and saying, hey, well... there's all these people coming to our city. We want to show work too, but we're not commercial spaces. So they organized things like the Stray Art Fair, which was in Chicago. And that was actually a non-commercial art fair by sort of fringe galleries, which eventually developed into the Bridge Art Fair by the same director, which is why I think he's always looking at different kind of venues for his Bridge events. So he shows in hotels and things like that as well. Because it has this kind of history of coming out of the artist-run spaces and him being an art critic as well. But I think for art fairs to remain interesting when you have them in, you know, Dubai, Korea, Singapore, you know, just every place has their own art fair now. It's about, you know, how do the art fairs make the statement? How are they revealing their interests by getting you know, interesting lectures started, promoting curated events, that kind of thing? And that's really what I want to see more of at the Auckland Art Fair. Is engaging with the fact that, again, it's another opportunity, a forum for artwork, that's right, rather than just sort of
that.
I mean, I don't know if I should be recorded, you know, criticizing sort of the art fair in Auckland, but I mean, they do have, a lecturer, sort of keynote speaker, but what I'd like to really see are more spaces for, you know, the artist-run spaces in Auckland. Like, why don't they have a stand, or why aren't there curated projects that are responding to the New Zealand context, or more commissioned projects as well? There's, you know, one or two. But
Auckland has no young artist program to talk about.
Sorry?
Auckland has no young artist program, whereas Major Fair has a section, like maybe 10 booths.
That's right.
Used by young artists.
Yeah.
With no
fee. Don't forget, it's a very new thing. It's only been
6 or 4. Yeah. I mean, if you think about Freeze Art Fair, the first one that they did in 2003, they did all of these things. And they were,
close.
Yes, well, that's right. I mean, it is evolving. And like what Andre was saying, there are a lot of the more established art fairs in Europe now also have booths or areas that are reserved for work by university students in those cities, which I think is a great idea as well. Because again, it is about creating a forum for emerging art, contemporary art. And this presentation is very, you know, Eurocentric and focused on Europe just because that's where we happened to be last year. But I think some of the art fairs in Asia as well are doing interesting events and performative things that tag along with the main fairs as well. But Europe also, you know, has a tradition of being sort of first place of developing these kinds of presentations, which is why I sort of focus on it. But I'm hoping to get a bit of a taste of what's happening in Asia to see if they're just maybe reproducing this model, or if they somehow found a new way to respond. Actually, Andre, you've been to one or two, haven't you?
I think it's just maybe the same. Yeah. It didn't change too much. I mean, Korea was really commercial. So.
What's
China? Just a fear of God.
Does China have art fairs? Shanghai is huge.
Yeah, Shanghai's the main one in Asia.
So interesting.
You also get cultural biases as well with the different fairs.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, that's quite interesting to see, though.
Yes.
But they want to talk about the Iceman.
There's
a very strong commercial capitalist. probably because it's such a large city to it and such a centre of industry.
And we actually had the director of the Art Singapore come to New Zealand a few months ago to actually promote the art fair to all the galleries here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting to me that they're actually making the effort to travel to all these other countries.
They probably have to, though.
Yeah,
well, that's the galleries
and the arts.
Even in
Melbourne,
back to
Melbourne, they have
the
Melbourne Gallery. Was that financial?
I heard it was financial.
Because I think it's an odd thing to say we're not going to, you know, we're not going to have this year.
Right.
But from now on, it would be annual, not biannual.
Oh, right.
So it's sort of a...
Or maybe it's a logistical thing, like they couldn't roll it out fast enough. But
I don't think they got a huge response from galleries. I don't think they got enough galleries in this. Is the open one better?
No. It's much smaller. Mm-hmm.
But it has
one of
Australia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. It'd be great to actually have more international galleries at the Auckland Art Fair that aren't from this region.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, obviously the presence of an art fair becomes an opportunity for local students, visitors, to get a taste of what other regions are doing and seeing if there are any common dialogues happening. So, you know, it'd be great to invite galleries from Europe, Asia, Africa.
It's not that they're eliminated, is it?
No, I don't think they're eliminated,
it's
but it's just, they're not interested, they're not being focused on. That's right. Well, it all comes down to money, doesn't it? Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask another question. How did you get in New Zealand on site to help you out with the airfare?
Oh, we're very good. We tried
to. Because they were such a large chunk of money.
That's right. Well,
you can write an article on the. That's
why
I'm
No, I didn't have to really set out like that. I just have to sort of thank them when I can. But we're very, very personable at City Outroom, so people like to work with us.
They'll come in here some other time, I'm sure.
Yes.
Maybe you'll be able to invite some of the overseas people in the same kind of reciprocal situation.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Cool. Any last questions? Should we wrap it up?
Hey, well, thank you so much for that.
Thank you for your advice. Oh, nice job. I'll get you that beer.
Sorry?